Senate Bills 540, 568, and 601. And we'll start with 540. Are there...
Here's the list right here.
Okay.
Do I just read a summary here?
Yes, and so we'll have Rich to read the summary.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 540 expands the authority of the State Board of Pharmacy over regulation and discipline of pharmacy technicians. It requires pharmacy technicians to provide the board a record of conviction of any arrest on which there is no acquittal or dismissal, and it sets penalties for disciplinary action against pharmacy technicians. As a little background, the board has responsibility to regulate the practice of pharmacy and enforce laws pertaining to drug outlets, pharmacists, drugs within the state. The board also conducts licensing, determines issues, practice standards, enforces standards, and restricts a license when necessary, and is responsible for the regulation of the training, qualification, and employment of pharmacy interns. A pharmacy technician is a person registered with the Board of Pharmacy who assists the pharmacist in the practice of pharmacy pursuant to rules of the board. Under current law, a person can be a pharmacy technician by registering, which includes submitting general information, educational qualifications, and work history to the board. Registration costs cannot exceed $50 and must be renewed annually. A pharmacy technician must be under the supervision, direction, and control of a licensed pharmacist.
We have two people up for hearing on this bill, and is that Tom Host, is that right? And from the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Oh. See, Tom, you write so proper.
I should have been a doctor with my handwriting.
Senator Carter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Holt. I'm executive director of the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Our members, the individual pharmacists in a variety of practice settings, the community setting that most of you are familiar with, as well as long-term care, chain community pharmacy, institutional mail order pharmacy, and senior care. We also represent approximately 240 independent owners of pharmacies, and I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists and the Statewide Pharmacy Coalition. I'll just summarize my prepared testimony, which you have. Senate Bill 540 is a fairly straightforward bill to solve the following problem. Under current Oregon law, anyone can send $25 to the Board of Pharmacy and they are registered as a pharmacy technician. The board does not have the ability or the authority to deny a technician registration if the person has a bad background or to deny a renewal for any reason, and also does not have the ability to impose any kind of a disciplinary oversight over a technician. It is simply a list of names that's kept at the Board of Pharmacy. This is a problem for employers because they cannot discover wrongdoing unless it has risen to the level of a criminal offense when someone is coming to their pharmacy to work. And many large pharmacy operations and a lot of small ones have been burned on this issue, where a technician or someone who calls themselves a technician comes to work for them, and in fact what they're doing is gaming the system in order to gain access to drugs. This obviously creates undue liabilities for pharmacy employers, for pharmacists, and it also puts the public at unnecessary risk, and we think it puts an unnecessary cloud over the good vocation of being a pharmacy technician. And that's the problem that we're trying to address here. The bill is very straightforward. What it simply does is take the language that has existed for some time now to cover the discipline process for pharmacists, which has been proven over many years to work very well, and adapted that to create a new section of statute that would apply to pharmacy technicians. It does not include a couple of important things to mention here, as we usually talk about some of these in the context of licensing. It does not include new education or training requirements beyond those that already exist in rule. Pharmacies currently have to maintain documentation of how they train technicians at each site, and that's appropriate because each site varies in its needs. So we don't have in mind going anywhere beyond this. I wanted to spend just a minute talking about how we came to this solution. We had long and in-depth discussions amongst basically all corners of the pharmacy community. We talked about this in every forum that we have. It was in our publications. We involved pharmacists, technicians, people in management positions in pharmacies. We involved the senior managements at the chain drug stores, and we involved health system pharmacists and managements at those pharmacies. And in short, we did everything we possibly could to invite input and to modify the proposal that you have before you. And what we arrived at was that a disciplinary process is the minimal and best way to deal with the problem we're trying to address. We did look at alternatives such as having simply a criminal background check being done, and came to the conclusion that would not be sufficient to achieve our objective here, that a criminal background check would not catch those things that fail to rise to being a criminal offense, although they may be extremely important to a pharmacy, particularly when you're dealing with diversion issues. So what you have before you is a bill that's now endorsed by not only our organization, the National Association of Chain Drug Stores has said that they approve of the bill. They operate about 400 pharmacies in Oregon, or nearly 400. The Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists and their members include pharmacy directors at most of the state's hospitals and health systems, and you're going to hear from Rick Solly, who's pharmacy director for Providence a little later on, and the Statewide Pharmacy Coalition, which is a group that we pull together to make sure that we're touching base with all corners of the pharmacy community. I give you all this just to underscore that I think we believe we've done everything we possibly could to arrive upon a consensus bill, or as close to consensus as we could get before we brought this to you. This bill is very focused on the single problem that we want to solve here and does not go beyond that, and we've used language that's been proven over a long period of time to work, and so we urge the committee to pass the bill out to the floor as presented. And that concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Tom, in addition to having the criminal background check, do you do drug testing?
Senator Carter, no.
Wouldn't that be a concern to pharmacists, especially with people being around?
Senator Carter, members of the committee, that's an intriguing idea. I think some employers may already be doing that on a random basis or as pre-employment.
I see a few heads shaking, but it just seemed to me that maybe the problem hasn't arisen enough for the board to have to take any action on. Further questions of Mr. Holt? Okay. In addition to Tom's report, what I'd like to do is to read into record a letter from Dr. Schnabel that says, "Dear Tom, the Board of Pharmacy has reviewed and discussed Senate Bill 540, which is sponsored by Senator Fisher at the request of OSPA, OSHP, and the Statewide Pharmacy Coalition. As you know, the board currently registers pharmacy technicians but has no authority to take disciplinary action. It appears that Senate Bill 540 will provide that authority and allow the board to exercise appropriate regulation. The board enthusiastically supports the bill as written and urges its passage." Mr. Solly. Please go forward.
Senator Carter, members of the committee, with your indulgence, I'd like to read a short statement. Good afternoon. My name is Rick Solly. I'm Regional Pharmacy Director for the Providence Health System, and I'm appearing to express my support for granting the Oregon Board of Pharmacy the authority to deny or revoke pharmacy technician registration, where discipline is defined in Senate Bill 540. The language for the technician discipline process is modeled on what currently applies in statute for pharmacists. I believe that adding discipline to the technician law is good for pharmacy, good for patients, and good for health systems. The ability to discipline technicians should reduce liability in health systems related to problems of drug diversion, abuse, or work quality and safety. The evolution of pharmacy practice means turning more responsibility over to technicians, and with responsibility comes accountability. Discipline is the only legal way to create an information profile that will follow a technician from pharmacy to pharmacy. There's a presumption incorrect under the current law that a registered technician has not been involved in unlawful behavior. Many health systems will not prosecute personnel for theft or diversion. The technician can honestly state that he or she has not been convicted of a crime. Under current law, the Board of Pharmacy cannot deny registration even if the technician discloses prior conviction for criminal acts. Many health systems, although protected by law in Oregon, will not disclose negative information on a reference check. Discovery of inappropriate behavior is therefore not always possible by subsequent employers. At the Providence Health System, we have had personal experience in having discharged pharmacy technicians due to drug diversion or because of other violations of pharmacy law. In reporting these actions to the Board of Pharmacy, we were told that it could take the information but could not deny the technicians their certificate of registration, take any disciplinary action, or disclose this information to other prospective employers of these technicians. It may be argued that registration in the context of Senate Bill 540 is simply licensure, but SB 540 does not create independent practitioner status, a common component for professional licensure. SB 540 also does not create a new health licensing board. The bill simply expands the board authority over an existing professional classification. Furthermore, the bill does not grant to the board any authority to set educational or training requirements for technicians that are not already granted under existing law. For these reasons, I encourage you to support Senate Bill 540, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions? Senator?
Would, if you're comfortable with doing this, could you expand a little bit on, in paragraph 4, you've had experience having to discharge pharmacy technicians due to drug diversion or other violations of pharmacy law. I mean, can you comment any further on that? I mean, what kind of dangers is that putting you in, to say nothing of the public itself?
Senator Carter and Senator Shields, the particular one particular instance that I recall, we discharged a technician for refilling her own personal prescriptions without authorization. Mm. This is a technician that we discharged, but the violation probably would not be one that a prosecutor would take up for prosecution. We reported to the Board of Pharmacy and were simply told there was nothing they could do about it. Thus, there was nothing really preventing that technician from applying for work at another pharmacy and doing the same.
So continue the story then. What would they do under this law?
Well, under this particular law, they could bring the technician in for a disciplinary inquiry, and I would probably be called to testify as to what specifically that technician did that was in violation of Oregon pharmacy law that resulted in their discharge. And then they would, through their own disciplinary process, would determine what action, if any, to take.
Thank you.
But isn't the other side of this, too, that if the Board of Pharmacy had had this oversight, that you could have put this person on probation, and the person could not have lost their job the first time around.
Unless in terms of how we handled it as an institution, we could have chosen to handle this differently, other than discharge the employee.
Right.
And that's kind of up to each individual employer as to how they like to handle these things. It's been my own personal opinion and practice that when we have employees who divert drugs, that it's been our practice to discharge them. And I have a personal feeling about that. I believe that pharmacists, when they're granted a license to practice pharmacy in the state of Oregon and handle substances that are at risk for diversion, that the state grants us a privilege to be involved in this practice. And there's a certain amount of accountability that goes with that, and trust that is invested in us. And when we violate that trust, I think that severe action should be taken, and loss of one's job, in my opinion, is appropriate because we violated that trust, and it also sends a message to the other people in the department that we're held to a very high level of accountability when it comes to handling drugs.
And right now, this person could just go on to another pharmacy.
That's correct.
Okay. Senator Messerly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe I should have asked this question of Tom when you were here. But I'm trying to get a sense of the scope of this problem. You said you've had problems in your organization, which I understand is quite large. Have you had one incident? Have you had six?
The incidence of this is relatively small. For example, in the last, say, 10 years, we probably discharged as three or four at the most out of, we employ at any one time in our system, probably 100 technicians. So it's a very small percentage, but it's like anything else. If you have a large number of workers, you're going to have a couple of bad apples.
Madam, would you respond to that? Excuse me.
Senator. I just can say, Madam Chair, I understand the need for credibility in your organization, too, and the importance of that. But.
Vice Chair Carter, Senator Messley, if I may, that is something that we asked ourselves very seriously, is whether this was a significant enough problem that it needed to be addressed with a change in the statute. I can tell you I've spoken to several of my independent owner members who have had this issue, and virtually all of the chains of size have told me they've had multiple issues of this sort. In one case, a technician literally walked across the street to work at a different pharmacy, and Pharmacy A couldn't really say anything to Pharmacy B about it, or neither did Pharmacy B know to ask.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
George? Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call the two opponents on this legislation, Ed Patterson from Oregon Hospitals and Bill Johnson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnston is not opposing this legislation, but he has some commentary that I think will be informative to the committee.
Let him come up with it.
I didn't want to put words in his mouth. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Patterson. I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I'm pleased to be here, and I think it's important for the committee to understand a little of the history of this piece of legislation you're seeing before you today. You're being handed out my testimony and a little packet of information Mr. Johnston would like to present shortly. First, let me say, in prefacing my comments to the committee, hospital pharmacies have had pharmacy technician for years, and they have been addressed in the statutes about how many technicians could work and be supervised by a pharmacist, and they work very successful. In 1997, the legislature passed a law providing for the registration of these pharmacists, technicians. The Board of Pharmacy Representatives sought full licensure, but the legislative committee was not convinced that providing more regulatory authority to the agency was necessary, since the law clearly states that a technician must work, and I quote, under the supervision, direction, and control of a licensed pharmacist. As amended, 2123 in 1997 established a pharmacy technician registry that requires the board to provide, among other things, the work history of an applicant to any requesting pharmacist. The board testified in 97, testimony in 97 clearly stated that by registering technicians and requiring pharmacies to report the technician's drug abuse, theft, or other misconduct to the board, prospective employers would have access to the information about job applicants, and former employers would be protected from liability for disclosing this information to the board. The Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems supported that legislation as it was amended in 1997. The board, with the support of the Professional Association, came back in the 99 session and last session, and again was seeking full licensure status and the ability to discipline pharmacy technicians. The association lobbyist stated in testimony supporting Senate Bill 184 in 99, and I quote, combined with employment law that prevents frank disclosure of employment history, the current law poses a significant burden to pharmacists to discover bad actors in the system, although every pharmacist by law is accountable for oversight of technicians. Most employee pharmacists have little or no control over who comes to work for them. We need better mechanisms to prevent bad actors from getting into the inside of pharmacy. and Senate Bill 184 in principle provides such a mechanism, end quote. The bill had a public hearing last session and died in committee upon adjournment. This committee now is faced with another bill seeking what basically is licensure status, although that is denied. Supported by the Pharmacy Board and the professional associations of its licensees, demanding the board be given the authority to discipline unlicensed technicians. That means removing them from the registry or denying their registration, in effect creating a health licensing. The primary justification for SB 540 is, and I've heard this before, we do not have the authority to weed out the bad actors. Attached to my testimony is a letter dated January 19, 1999, to an Oregon registered pharmacy technician, signed by then Board Compliance Director Gary Schnabel, now the Director of the Board of Pharmacy. Mr. Schnabel is an ardent proponent of granting more power to the board because he does not believe it has the authority to weed out the, quote, bad actors. You will note in the last paragraph of that letter, he states, in part, pursuant to the board's administrative rules, no pharmacy can lawfully employ you as a pharmacy technician without the written permission of the board. Well, I agree with his decision. How much more power does a board need than to deny employment to the individual? The question begs to be asked, what pharmacy manager would hire someone with that background as a pharmacy technician? I think none. And question two, why was this employment history not included in the registry? The Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems continues to support the technician registry, but we believe the board should do a better job in providing work history of the applicant. If the board needs additional authority to obtain criminal offender record of the applicant, we will support that. There is, in fact, a new technology, screening of applicants, available to the board that could provide excellent results on initial screening to determine if additional background checks would be desirable. As part of that testimony, Mr. Johnson is here, and if time allows, I would encourage you to listen to a short presentation. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I ask Legislative Council to draft some amendments to this measure, but apparently they're not done yet. I have also attached a hand-engrossed copy of the amendments to the bill, but I'm having them handed out right now. The engrossed bill retains the additional background gathering authority intended by the sponsors, but eliminates the excessive and what we consider unnecessary disciplinary authority requested by the sponsors. We cannot speak for the retail pharmacy industry, but we have every confidence that no hospital pharmacy manager would hire a technician with a poor employment or criminal record. And I can assure the committee that if discipline is necessary for a technician, our managers are fully capable of meting that out as a part of their managerial duties. We do not need to delegate a management responsibility for the supervision of technicians to a state agency. In this time of healthcare workforce shortages, it is not the time to limit entry into the workforce, which licensure tends to do. This is a licensure measure, not a registration measure, and licensure of technicians who already are required to work, quote, under the supervision and direction and control of a licensed pharmacist, will limit entry into the occupation. Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would urge your adoption of the proposed amendments. And if I may ask Mr. Johnston to make a presentation about some of the new technology that is available for screening potential applicants.
Senator Shields.
Yeah, I'm sure you will get to him in a minute. I just had a question. Ed, it seems to me that your main concern is the workforce shortage in the final analysis. I mean, you see this as unnecessary and maybe redundant or something like that, but the main issue for you is a shortage, potential work shortage for hospitals.
Senator Shields, Mr. Chair, no, that is not our main objection to this. We objected in 1997, and we objected in 1999. This is a unique lower level, if I can use the term without being pejorative, position whose supervision is directed by the statutes, whose supervision the numbers supervise is by administrative rule. In fact, I believe that's by the statutes also. And so we do not see the necessity for creating this additional bureaucracy, if you will, to provide disciplinary authority over basically an assistant to a pharmacist. And we do believe that this type of authority is indeed licensure. That's what licensure is all about. It's the most highly regulated state authority there is. Registries, in and of their nature, as defined, not by statute, unfortunately, but registry by the title and by the Pew Commission recommendations, is a registry of individuals who are registered with the state, so you can track their work history and do different sorts of work. So we do not think that just by calling them by registration, but providing disciplinary authority, leaves them as a registry, but indeed gives them licensure authority over the individuals.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Mesler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Patterson, I'm having trouble understanding why, as we've got several letters in my bill file of employers who are endorsing this bill and supporting this bill, why it's different for the Hospital Association. Exactly where is it more costly for the hospitals to operate under this new bill, or is I'm trying to have get an understanding why the arguments that you're bringing forward aren't brought forward by the other employers.
Senator Messonly, Mr. Chair, I would be the first to admit that a hospital pharmacy is different than a retail pharmacy. And when you say other employers, I'm not exactly sure who you're alluding to, but I assume it's retail pharmacists. The use of pharmacy technicians by retail pharmacies is not a new phenomenon either. One of the historical battles we have had over the years in the legislature is how many pharmacy technicians retail pharmacists can supervise. And it was limited to two. I understand this bill does away with that limitation. But my guess is it's an economic issue with retail pharmacists. With hospital pharmacies, for the most part, many of the pharmacies are run by PhD pharmacists. They have an adequate staff of registered pharmacists who are well-educated, and pharmacy technicians themselves are just meant to be kind of the eyes and hands of the pharmacist to make them more efficient. And as I indicated in my earlier part of my testimony, we have used technicians for a long, long time in hospitals. Our concern is that given the Board of Pharmacy itself, which has more power than any healthcare licensing board in the state, because it's the only health licensing board in the state that also licenses the sites where the professional pharmacists practice. And they also license the individual pharmacists. And now they're asking for or supporting the concept of essentially giving them disciplinary authority over technicians. And as Lord Acton said in the House of Lords 200 or 300 years ago, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we do not think it's justified from an expenditure standpoint on the part of the state.
Ed, referring back to the letter here from Gary Schnabel to Glenda Alleman Bowman. Next to last paragraph, you talked about how much more control did they want or how much more of a heavy-handed they want, but it states here under current law, the Oregon Board of Pharmacy is required to issue you a certificate of registration as a pharmacy technician despite this theft and consumption of cocaine and despite the intentional false statements you made in your application to the board. Is that a good situation?
Mr. Chair, we have had ongoing debate with the Board of Pharmacy since the 97 legislation passed, which the legislature, I think, in 97 believed that the board would have the authority to gather the work history of a technician. The Board of Pharmacy has not done that. Our belief is that they were granted the authority to do that. My personal belief is that they would not settle for anything less than disciplinary authority, so they didn't do it, so they could come back session after session requesting it. Now, what the information, what that paragraph says is that they are required to certify or required a certificate of registration regardless of the, despite your recent theft and consumption. That's probably an accurate statement. But if Mr. Solly or some other a manager, hospital, or a pharmacy manager requested the name of a registered technician, and the registration came back with the work history as it should, then Mr. Solly or whomever it might be would look at the work history of that technician. If they saw the technician was fired from the last three jobs, or that technician was had a conviction, a felony conviction for substance abuse and theft, I don't think Mr. Solly or any other hospital manager would hire the individual. So we believe that if they don't, if the board doesn't have the authority that they wish to have to maintain an accurate work history, then they should be given that. If they don't have the authority to do a criminal background check, then they should be given that. And in fact, as Mr. Johnston will present to the committee, there is a very simple, inexpensive way to screen these applicants for registry. It's my personal belief that the Board of Pharmacy should screen the applicants, because their role was, and what they requested back in 97, was the ability to convey this information to potential pharmacists, for potential employer pharmacists.
But should they have to list somebody on a registry that has this kind of a background?
Mr. Chair, that is a policy decision, of course, that the legislature has made. At least in 97 they made that they did have that responsibility. All they had to do is provide the background information.
Yeah, I wished I remembered exactly and had total recall that I could go back, because obviously I was not the only one that was here in 97. There were others, and we dealt with this bill, and I can't go back and just recall exactly what our thinking was on here, whether we felt that this was the perfect bill that would never need to be touched again, or whether we knew that this was a process that might go on and expand from there. I don't remember, but I don't think that I would have knowingly put the board into a situation that they would have actually had to been required to register somebody that had gone through this kind of a background and have that name on a registry list for anybody to get. I mean, somebody like that should obviously, in my way of thinking, not be on there, not be allowed to be on there. No one should be forced to have to list somebody like that on a registry. Senator Shields.
Yeah, I'm wondering about a proactive, reactive kind of thing, where in a proactive sense, I guess I should say goodbye to everybody. The world just got up and left. That's what usually happens when I start to talk. Everybody gets up and leaves.
I'm sorry, I had a request. Did you wish to?
No, I don't know the stills, but I think we should recognize them.
Thank you for coming. You know, well, having been a preacher for 30 years, it's very disconcerting to see the congregation get up and leave. I mean, yeah.
That should tell you something, Senator.
Why do you think I went into politics? I mean,
Senator Shields, my aunt had a perfect answer for that. When her son made a young son made a kind of an unfortunate comment about somebody, she said, "Won't the young kids say what the old folks think?" I guess these young kids are telling us that's old folks would just soon get out of here.
That's why I left off on the line of interrogation here at the moment they started walking down. If we can regroup, Ed, what I'm driving at is this, and I think it's proactive versus reactive. Right now, a person that wants to hire a technician has to be proactive. He or she has to make the effort to call the board and double check on this thing. Okay. If the board was doing this, kind of what this law would set in place, it would take that burden off the person doing the hiring. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Senator Shields,
I don't know, but you must be getting better.
I've got to interrupt to make a comment. There's another biblical phrase that says, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away."
In this case, the Lord giveth after he taketh away. Yeah, okay.
Maybe the legislature should
start over.
I don't know. I think Ed's going to leave any second. He's tired of this.
Senator Shields, I'm never tired of having a debate with you. Mr. Chair, you know, I hearken back to 97 when this policy decision was made, and that was made with the support of our, they requested the support of our association, and we were accepting to a registry because the proponents said they would be helpful in doing work history background checks. So we said, okay, that's fine. In my opinion, at least in hospitals, I can't speak for retail pharmacies, but at least in hospitals, we do background checks. And I think that our responsibility is not, should not be removed and said the board's responsibility is assuming responsibility for us, because we still have the exposure to liability.
See, that's the, Mr. Chair, excuse me,
Senator,
Ed, because I've been sitting here with this question all the time. I see two different situations here. And one, because there are independent chains here, but they're also independent pharmacies that have this issue, whereas hospitals that have had technicians for years and years and years are in a groove where they know how to deal with the issues that they have. And so not only does it become an issue of economics, but it also becomes the lowering of a person's in-house action for how their people are going to respond to what their needs are. I mean, and it appeared to me that, Mr. Chairman, that we have two different actions going on, and it needs to take some reasonable minds to sit down and talk in terms of how, you know, it's like when we develop legislation for a particular area, for a particular group, and be real specific about the focus of it. How do we let the Ed Pattersons, the hospitals that know how to do what they want to do with their people, continue their line of operations rather than superimposing now something that is a different action upon them? And I think that will get to the crux.
Senator Carter, I don't want to lose your love. And you like to get out of here early on Friday afternoon.
Well,
and because of that, I'm going to allow Mr. Johnson to testify here, and I'm going to say that we're going to revisit this and get together again and talk as a group outside of here and see what we can do before we bring this back up again. And I think possibly we can make some headway, because I see some problems here, too, with a small pharmacist that doesn't have a personnel department, that doesn't have a legal department that knows how to advise him.
That's
He's going to say, maybe this guy did something, but I got to get rid of him, but I can't prove it.
That's right.
And do I get sued if I turn him in, or one thing and another, if I send his anything to the registry or anything like that? And whereas, obviously, a group that's quite capable of having their own personnel department taking care of some of those things. And I do think we need to pursue this a little further. So, Mr. Johnson, if you'd go ahead, and I appreciate everybody's...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the committee. I represent a company called Insight Worldwide. We have a survey that is given to applicants when they come in and apply for work. It screens for drugs, theft, violence, work comp fraud, dependability, and lying. It's a survey that takes approximately 12 to 20 minutes to be administered to a candidate when they apply. There are 70 questions. We have this in different languages, and they actually take this over a computer. When they finish taking the test, the computer thanks them. The employer logs back in and has a reply about that applicant right over the screen. It will actually tell you if they are currently using illegal drugs, if they have stolen cash or merchandise from their former employer, if they're violent, if they're dependable, if they have a problem with work comp fraud, or are they lying to you and trying to outsmart our test. We are very accurate. People that use our program use it right up front after they have filled out an application. They administer the survey. They learn a lot about these candidates before they go any further with the interview. Our national statistics show that 11.4% of the candidates are admitting to comp fraud, 16% are admitting to current illegal drug use, 12.5% are admitting to dependability problems, 11% are admitting to theft off the job, and 4.3% are admitting to violence on the job. These are national stats that we have with businesses that we do use our program throughout the country. We are based here in Salem, Oregon. It is a very inexpensive way to screen these applicants, and you'll find out a lot about them right up front before you go any further. What we're looking for with drugs is we're looking for current drug use. What are they doing right now? We will actually report back to the administrator what kind of drugs the person is using currently. They actually tell us. These people justify that this lifestyle is all right, and they talk about it. We give them a setting where they will open up and talk to us. If these questions were asked in an interview, the person would deny everything that we ask them. But by the way we present this, they open up and tell us over and over again what they're doing. It does not matter education level. We are in every kind of business across the country, and all of these people talk. If they're doing this, they'll talk about their lifestyle and what they're doing.
Senator Shields.
You listed all kinds of behavior.
Yes.
By percentage. The one thing you didn't list was how many people, you said your test has a way of knowing how many people are trying to cheat the test.
Mm-hmm.
What's the percentage there? How many people try to cheat on the test?
Okay, as far as the cautions, you mean as far as how many are really out trying to outsmart it?
Outsmart
probably,
the test.
Probably about 6%.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
I'm trying to do a comparison here. In 30 years in the ministry, I've done a fair amount of pre-marriage counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And we use a little test.
Mm-hmm.
It's 180 questions. You agree or disagree with statements. And you can actually tell who's trying to make themselves look better than they are and who is kind of self-deprecating in their answers. So, there's a way, and it's pretty accurate, of telling whether they're being honest and reflecting their true feelings in the test mechanism.
Right.
And this is very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm saying is your percentage seems low.
Mm-hmm.
If only 6% of the people are trying to cheat on the test, it's below the
statistical means.
The norms. So what do? Do you scare them all before they take the tests and tell them, hey, this is going to... How do you keep that percentage so low?
Okay. People talk. These people, as you see by these percentages that I gave you, people tell us what they're doing. They justify this, and we get them to talk. The people that think they're going to be real clever and outsmart us, and that is a very low percentage. I mean, we, as you see, the 16% of these people are telling us about current drug use. These people talk, and they tell us what they're doing. As far as this being a low percentage, we're getting all the rest of them to tell us what they're currently doing. That answers what you're...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Mesler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me ask it maybe in a little different way. What is the percentage of accuracy of your test?
98%.
That again seems extremely high.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
And we operate in facilities that are very scrutinized, that have done backgrounds and drug testing across the country. They have found this to be extremely accurate, and they use this right up front before they do anything else. We are not saying that we're a replacement for any of those. We want them to have those safety checks if they're doing those.
Senator Shields.
Yeah, Ed said that you didn't have a position.
No.
On the bill itself today.
No.
What convinced you to come and testify if you don't have a position on the bill? Why did you come?
I guess probably to let people know we exist.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shiel, I had been exposed to a presentation that Mr. Johnson had made, and this had been some time ago, and I thought to myself, why doesn't the Board of Pharmacy do this for people who apply for pharmacy technician jobs? It's a very inexpensive test, and the information could be provided to any potential employer. That'd be part of the work history.
Well, I can understand why you would want him to come, because it presents an alternative to this change in law. Other than maybe to advertise his business, I can't understand particularly why he would come. I mean, I understand why you've invited him.
Well, maybe he likes me.
Well, lots of us do.
Oh, I know that. I know.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator George.
I think there's a potential here that we could administer this to politicians before they face re-election.
Now that you've safely been re-elected, you say that.
I'm term limited out. I could care less.
Well, I tell you, and I don't want you to get the wrong idea, because if Ed wouldn't have invited him and I'd known about him, I'd have invited him, because
yeah,
it's been my intention to avail myself of all information that I can have on a given subject to make as intelligent a decision as I possibly can. And I'll let you draw your own opinion of my intelligence. But in any event, I have made a practice of...
Well, you opened that door wide.
I know. I just wanted to close it before you got there. So anyway, I would appreciate, and I do appreciate your comment. I've made a practice of bringing people from private sector in that have knowledge of things that where they can help us and show us ways to do our work better. So thank you very much for coming, and I appreciate all the input, and we will be getting together to work on it, and I'll have staff work out a time when
thank you, Mr. Chair,
and I'll be there. Thank you all for coming, and we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 540 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 568, and I'll have staff introduce it.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 568 eliminates the requirement that a pharmacy post a sign advising patrons that a less expensive equivalent drug may be available for substitution to fill a prescription, and requires a prescription to be labeled with the name of the medication or as instructed by the prescriber. As some background, under current law, every pharmacy in Oregon must post an easily seen sign with specific dimensions. With the exact wording that reads, this pharmacy may be able to substitute a less expensive drug, which is therapeutically equivalent to the one prescribed by your doctor, unless you do not approve. Basically, the sign notifies people that there may be a generic equivalent to a brand name or more expensive drug. Oregon statute also requires that a pharmacist place the name of the medication on a container's label, except if the prescriber writes do not label or something equivalent to that, or orally transmits, lets the pharmacist know not to label the container.
Thank you, Tom Holt, the Oregon State Pharmacists Association.
Chairman Fisher, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. The bill before you is, as Rick said, it has two parts. One, it removes a requirement that we post a sign regarding the fact that people will receive a generic drug when a therapeutically equivalent generic is available to the brand. That requirement dates back to when generic substitution first began in Oregon a little more than 20 years ago, and that has long since become the standard of practice. Most health plans require that a generic be substituted when one is available. It's federal law concerning Medicaid. And odds are, if you go into a pharmacy, you're probably going to get a generic for your prescription. So this is not a bill, I want to be clear, that would change at all the service people receive at the pharmacy. Law also requires that people be counseled about their prescription, and that counseling includes informing somebody that they've received a generic. We also have recently under rule a requirement that the label include a description of the medication, and so the generic becomes part of that conversation as well. We simply believe the sign is no longer necessary. People are long accustomed to receiving the generics. The sign was first basically a warning back at the time that generics were somehow regarded as not being up to standard, and that's certainly no longer the case. More than 90% of the prescriptions dispensed are generics. The second provision in Senate Bill 568 really just tweaks our labeling language. The option under current law is to either say exactly what's in the container or not to label it. This poses a technical issue when we're dealing with placebos, which are sometimes used in the mental health arena and other reasons. And so what we're doing here is, instead of saying do not label, that we be allowed to label it as the prescriber intends. In other words, the pharmacist can work out with the prescriber how they want to label it when it's not something that you would simply label, you know, that you have X drug in the bottle. We regard this as really kind of a housekeeping measure in terms of our statute. I understand that there's some people here today who don't like the bill, and that's news to us, and we'd certainly be willing to discuss making a change to the signage piece if that would help us to get the rest of this through. And that concludes my testimony.
Questions? I just wanted to make certain, because I had talked to you previously on this, and I've had some correspondence with folks on this, and this was not something that would be warning people that they could get a cheaper drug. This is primarily warning them that they might have substituted a cheaper drug for the one that was originally ordered, which is a standard practice. So it is not something that would deny someone the idea that should bear the idea that this is a pharmacist trying to sell a more high-priced drug in place of the one that they might be able to get if they just knew about it.
Chair Fisher, that is exactly correct.
Thank you, Tom. We have is it Maine?
Lynn Marie Kreider.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Sorry if my writing is difficult.
That's all right. And Marcia Kelly. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Marie Kreider. I'm research director at the Oregon AFL-CIO. One of the priority issues for the Oregon AFL-CIO this session is cost containment in healthcare, and particularly with respect to prescription drugs. And in view of what is happening in healthcare costs and prescription drug costs at this time, this bill seems particularly ill-timed. Whatever the origin of the requirement for the notice in pharmacies about the ability of the pharmacist to substitute a lesser cost equivalent, it operates in reality as a consumer protection measure in two regards. It alerts you to the power of your physician to refuse to allow a substitute, but it also lets the consumer know that the pharmacist may in fact be able to substitute a lesser cost drug. As you will be aware, existing law allows the pharmacist to substitute, but does not require the pharmacist to substitute a lower cost equivalent drug. What the posting allows is for the consumer to be active in the cost containment process. I think of an example that my mother shared with me just a couple of months ago of going into a pharmacy to pick up some eye drops to cure an eye infection. It rang up at over $100. She was as shocked as Senator George. And she said, "My, can't we do something that costs less than that?" And I don't know, in fact, whether that was a case where the pharmacist had the ability to substitute but hadn't chosen to, or whether it was a circumstance where he had to call the physician and say, "Can we substitute?" But the fact is, my mother raised an issue about cost, and she walked out of the pharmacy with a $7 prescription, which cured her infection. And so I believe that what that sign does for consumers is let them know that they can raise a question about whether a lesser cost equivalent is available, and that we should keep that. Whatever its historical origin, I think it now serves the purpose of inviting the customer to participate in dealing with the problem that we've all got to deal with, and that is the cost of prescription drugs to Oregonians. So we would oppose the portion of the bill that deletes subsection 4 on page 2 of the bill at lines 5 through 10. We haven't taken a position on the balance of the bill. Thank you.
Questions? Does anyone wish to testify further on this bill?
Good afternoon, Senator George and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition, a nonprofit organization of women that advocates for women and families. I'm here today to testify against Senate Bill 568. As a state and a nation, we are faced with increasing health-related costs. Yesterday, in invited testimony before your House counterpart committee, the insurance industry testified that part of the rising rates in health insurance is the cost of prescription medicine. And they went on, I should have said that they were talking about named prescription medicine, not necessarily generic. Yet this bill removes a reminder to all consumers that a less costly generic drug might be available. Recently, I had a fall, and my doctor prescribed painkiller so that I'd be able to sleep at night because I tore ligaments in my foot. And when my spouse went into the pharmacy, the pharmacist asked him whether he would want a generic drug, not just giving a generic drug. And he said, yes, that would be fine. Those 12 painkillers were $6, and if I would have had the named drug, they would have been $8.20. That's a little amount for just 12 painkillers. But if I was on chronic health condition that I had medication, that would make a lot of difference, and that does make a difference in working Oregonians' lives, in seniors who are on limited incomes' lives. And this is, as the other person testifying against the bill, is a consumer issue, and if it's working now, why tweak it? It does remind people that they do have those rights for generics. The Pharmacists Association says, well, it's a standard of practice. It's required by some of the health plans. It's required by Medicaid. We do know that everyone does not have health insurance. And so whether it's required by the health insurance, how does the pharmacist know unless of that? So we would, again, only oppose subsection 4. We haven't taken a position on the other portion of the bill, so possibly you could amend it.
Ma'am? I have a question. There's nothing in here that indicates the sign was of any value at all because the druggist asked personally.
I was just giving an example of the cost.
I understand about the cost, and that was never under question. But in either one of your testimonies, is there any indication that it was a sign that did it? It was somebody asking, and the other person already knew that there was a potential possibly of getting other generic type treatments, or in the case of the pharmacist himself asking, which certainly doesn't show an intention on the pharmacist of raking a haul in off the poor private consumer.
And we're not contending that. We're just saying that the notification alerts the consumer that it has been, that there could be generic medication, and that they would be able to have that generic medication. Everyone at this point doesn't always know that that's an availability.
We'd like to thank the young students here for their participation and hope you learned something today that was profitable.
Senator, what school do we have?
I don't know. What?
Highland Park Middle School
in Beaverton. Oh, Beaverton. Right.
Welcome, and have a safe trip home.
Thank you.
You know, I can tell us different story. My pharmacist encouraged me to take a generic drug that saved me about $5 on a prescription. It was a 250 pill prescription, one a day, and I didn't catch on what was happening. I went through 250 days of misery till I went back and got the next prescription or the next fill, and they didn't have any of the cheap stuff that I'd been taking, so I got the real stuff, and then just like that, my problem went away. So I had just the opposite situation with a generic situation. I wished I'd never heard the word generic. I would give a whole lot of money to pay for the regular labeled drug on all the rest of my prescriptions over a long period of time to get that 250 days of misery back. So I think there's times when some of these things can be certainly go both ways, and I would be the first to say that I've been on a prescription now for 7 years, getting it basically out of the same drugstore the whole entire time. When this thing came past, I haven't had a chance to get back home and go to the drugstore since then to see where the sign is, but I have been in and out of there and gone into the private office and talked. I know this person that owns the business personally. I know all of his staff personally, and I've never once myself personally observed this sign. I couldn't tell you where he's got it. So I'm questioning, you know, really, it all of a sudden raises a red flag because the initial thing sounds bad, when in reality I'm wondering actually how many people can actually pinpoint the fact that they've ever seen one of those signs and actually ever read it and asked for something because of it, or were tipped off to something because of it.
Mr. Chairman, I Lynn Marie Kreider, I don't think we can give you statistics about how many of the consumers that raise issues about cost of something that's been prescribed for them do so because of the sign. And we're not proposing, obviously, here either the bill or those of us who are opposed to the bill, that the authority of pharmacists change or the right of consumers to ask. But I do think when you have a set of young people coming up, they're not going to have had the experience before of having a dialogue about prescription cost. I think the signs are helpful in that regard, and we would like them retained.
Well, I would like to have one letter in my file, or at least one person come to me and say, I actually saw the sign in the pharmacy. I've had people that are obviously paying more attention to the list of bills that go through here than they're paying to what's up on the walls of their pharmacy. There's not a single one of them have indicated that they even know where it is, or that that did kept them from something. It's all just they're perceiving some chilling effect here and some massive conspiracy on the part of the pharmacists of the state of Oregon to try to get more money out of them some way or another, and I haven't been able to get one letter or one contact with a person that actually is saying, you know, I went in there, I saw this sign, and my pharmacist was giving me a very expensive drug, and I saved myself so many dollars because I saw this sign. I haven't had any testimony to this effect.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm one of those people that will be a no on this bill, and I will be a no on this bill because I have experienced what you've experienced. I don't like to take generic drugs. I tend to have a very high sensitivity to medication, so I break out easily. And so mine are just specifically given for a particular reason. I would be voting no on this bill because several places I have seen the sign that says we can offer you generic drug if the cost for that drug is less than the prescription drug that was given you. I've seen that. But I think it's a privilege as well as a right for the consumer to walk into place and know they have that choice. That's why I'm a no on this bill, because I think they should know that, because some people, not knowing that, will buy the more expensive drug and not knowing that they have, you know, they have a choice of buying a lesser drug. So I'm a person who wants to see the sign stay there and to at least know that it should be there as a consumer protection issue. And I know that's why I would be voting no on the bill, because I want to see the signs stay there, and they should be prominently placed.
Well, you've now answered my request. No, really? Please come and has talked to me that they actually have seen the sign. Would you be adverse to working with an amendments, and are you against the last half of the bill?
See, that's why maybe I should have said that was though. I would, Mr. Chairman. I would.
No. I mean, in consideration of the bill, because I think that there was hasn't been any question raised, at least about a portion of
that's right.
what the bill covers.
I agree.
Only with the one portion of the bill.
I'd be glad to work with Tom on this.
I guess I would hazard a guess, and I've talked to my own local pharmacists on this too, and they do support the bill. And we have a letter from the pharmacist board of pharmacy supporting it, and I want to enter that into the record. But I can see that it's something basically that's being done, and it would only have to be initiated by what new pharmacies come into being. It wouldn't have to be something redone by everybody around the state. So I will, again, not go into work session on this at this time because we can't pass a bill in concept. And I would like to get together with some of the folks on both sides of the issue and discuss it a little further. And then if amendments appropriate, I don't just like to necessarily ride herd over somebody to put a bill in without talking with them when I start fashioning amendments and putting them on the spot here.
Mr. Chairman, I did.
60-second decision.
Yeah. I did tell Tom about this earlier, and I'd be more than glad to.
Well, I had Tom in my office discussing this also.
Right.
And,
okay.
Because I did have some constituents that, matter of fact, they didn't even give me the benefit of the doubt here. A lot of people don't realize that we are the avenue of legislation,
right?
Regardless of whether we necessarily support this thing or not. And people have a right to get to the legislature through us. And in an issue like this, where I knew it was coming before my committee anyhow, I don't have a problem doing this because I can go with it or not go with it as I choose as a committee chair. So I have written and indicated that to the persons concerned down there. But one of the fellows wrote a letter to the editor, and I got home last weekend and see my name in print, and whose side am I on anyway, and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, if we don't discuss these things,
we have
and he was looking at it strictly not from the fact that it was a warning to the person that they might have something like this subject. He was looking at it only if it was somebody trying to take away and hide the fact from that they might be able to save a little money. So. I'm more than willing to discuss this. We've got one more bill to go. Thank you, ladies, for coming. Appreciate
thank you,
it.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for letting me play the devil's advocate a little bit. And we'll close our works public hearing on Senate Bill 568 and go into a public hearing on Senate Bill 601. Tom? We're loading you up today.
Senate Bill 601 establishes the education requirements for licensing of pharmacists by reciprocity for applicants who have a degree from a college or school of pharmacy outside the U.S. The Board of Pharmacy can provide a license or license someone by examination or through reciprocity. By examination, the person must have an undergraduate degree from a college of pharmacy that has been approved by the board. If the person holds a degree from outside the country, the board has discretion on a case-by-case basis to decide if the degree qualifies a person when by examination. By reciprocity, the person must pull a license from another state against reciprocity to people with Oregon license. Unlike the examination requirement, though, the board is not given the discretion to decide on case-by-case basis if that degree meets the educational qualifications.
You might notice we have a letter of support here from the Board of Pharmacy, and I'll enter that right now. As part of the evidence in our committee hearing, and also there's a letter attached to that that was written in support to Tom Holt. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, there are copies. Excuse me. I wondered what was going on here. The letters to Tom are copies for the rest of the staff, so I collected them in error here. Well, go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
Chair Fisher, again, for the record, Tom Holt from the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Perhaps the third time will be the charm today. the Senate Bill 601, as described to you in the summary, is very straightforward. It gives the Board of Pharmacy discretion when, as an applicant for licensure by reciprocity, and their degree is from outside the United States. They have that discretion now to allow someone to take the exam, but they don't have it for reciprocity to another state license. An example of where this might come up, and this is a common occurrence, a pharmacist who's been practicing in Washington State under a Washington license for a number of years, but was educated in, say, British Columbia, and they want to come to Oregon and practice. They don't have an easy process to get licensed here. Typically, someone from another state would just get licensed by reciprocity. Going through the exam is—it's sort of like the bar exam or any other professional exam. Nobody wants to do it again. And all this would do is what 601 would do is allow the board to look at the totality of the person's record and make an individualized decision whether or not they could license that person by reciprocity and let them come to work here. It would be a small step that could be taken to help ease our severe shortage of pharmacists. We thought that just giving the board discretion was the appropriate step, as we certainly did not want to open the door to, you know, diploma mills based on a Caribbean island or something like that. So it's a real straightforward, simple bill.
Okay, and Tom, maybe the third time will be a charm. We don't have anybody else to testify.
Good.
Unless there's someone in the audience that wished to sign up at the last minute here. I'm going to just hurry this along and exit our public hearing and go into a work session on Senate Bill 601.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
I move Senate Bill 601 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter has moved Senate Bill 601 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Opposition? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll? And I will mention for the record that Senator Shields is excused. Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carter.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Is it my turn to carry one?
I don't mind carrying this one, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, all right. Senator Carter will be the carrier, and the motion passes. I will adjourn the work session on Senate Bill 601, and nothing further to come before the committee. Have a nice weekend, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.